tell you about Public Square. There are several lines that meet other edges.
Youth of this country who are already in a disillusioned, disenchanted state will be encouraged.
Where we talk about the fine margin. Sometimes it's black, white, and blurry.
It's also informed by the need to save costs and reduce legislative time.
Then there are the actors right at the center, coming through political processes, which could be dramatic.
To the extent of this impeachment, if Parliament does not raise this money.
And controversial.
If driving through the roads is engaging the macabre dance, compatibility is that of government.
And there's you to help connect the dots from the top to the bottom. Join Rotimi Sankore and Arogo Obo at the Public Square every Friday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is the Public Square.
And here, Shaku Maku, everyone. It's a lovely Friday afternoon in the city of Lagos. And you're onto the Public Square. And this is a two-in-one combo special, which means the first hour between now and 5 p.m. we're going to be focusing on the World Population Day. And this is observed every 11th of July every year. In the second hour, we'll review an update on the drama around the vice presidential and running mates for next year's general elections. And also this weekend's Osun State governorship poll. Remember, you can interact with us at Public Square NG, at Rotimi Sankore, at Aworo Obo, and at Nigeria Info FM. On WhatsApp, it's 0809-597-5805. The Population Day Hour is produced by me and Rotimi in partnership with the Africa Center for Development Journalism and with support from the MacArthur Foundation. Today we'll be focusing on a number of issues, population projections, importance of population and demographic data, tiers of government, not national, state, and local, what they should be doing to maximize data for planning. What are the consequences for countries if subnational levels of government don't act on data? And gender dimensions of population and demographic data. So this is a big discussion. I'm Aworo Obo. You're welcome again to the Public Square. Rotimi's up and running now. Good evening, Rotimi.
Yeah, hello.
Excellent. Excellent. And so we can proceed with the issues straight up, Rotimi. Thankfully, the rains have been kind to us.
Yes.
So the rains, this drizzle this afternoon, I said, oh my goodness, it's not going to happen again. And it did not happen again. All right, Rotimi. So we're going to begin with population history and projections for Nigeria. So let's start up with when the first populations from 1960, and we'll run it all the way to 2050, Rotimi.
Yes, it's just for big picture, so that everyone is on the same page as we discuss the challenges and the solutions. It's important for everybody to know that in 1960, Nigeria was roughly, population of Nigeria was roughly 45 million. Roughly 45 million, 1960 at independence. 10 years after that, by 1970, it had grown by 10 million to 55 million. But after 1970, it just started jumping exponentially. By 1980, it was 73 million. By 1990, 95 million. By 2000, at the turn of the century,
right,
it had jumped to 122 million. By 2010, 158 million. By 2020, 206 million. Now the estimates for 2022 is 216 million. 216 million from just 45 million in 1960. Now, looking forward, by 2030, it's estimated to jump to 262 million. So note that between 1960 and 1970, the jump was by 10 million. But between 2020 and 2022, the jump is massive. It is massive. 206 million to 262 million. So that jump is almost 50 million in 10 years between 2020 and 2030. Almost a 50 million jump compared to 1960 to 1970 when it was a 10 million jump. Now, by 2050, the estimates are that we'll be well over 400 million. So, in other words, between 2020 and 2050, Nigeria's population would have doubled.
Absolutely.
To an extra 200 million. That is a lot. Now, why we're emphasizing this, the point is, unless the planning is done to keep up with the electricity needs, the health needs, the education needs, the transport needs, and so forth,
housing,
everything
too.
We get progressive, yes, housing, and so everything we get progressively worse. And as we can see, at all tiers of government now, federal, state, local government, that planning is not going on. That is why we say often on Public Square that no planning is going on in the ministries and departments of planning. So really, you can see that population issues, which ought to benefit the country by nature of what is called the demographic dividend, that is, as your population grows, you get a dividend from it, bigger economy and so forth like that. Instead, we have more and more people living in poverty. I mean, the UN resident coordinator for Nigeria just said yesterday that Nigeria is not on track to meet the sustainable development goals because roughly 100 million people are now living in multidimensional poverty. There are some other data to go with that. If you'd like to see the data on that, as well as the population data we just mentioned, as usual, I urge you, have a quick peep at my handle on Twitter at Rotimi Sankore. May I also mention that a lot of the data is generated with the support of the colleagues at the Africa Center for Development Journalism. So if you want to look at that, it's at dev_journalism, at dev_journalism. So that's where we are now. The planning is not being done to meet with the population. And therefore, if the urgent action is not taken, the problems can only get worse. That's the importance of that summary overview of our population history and our population projection.
Absolutely, and it lays the foundation for our conversation this evening. So we get into the meat of the matter, which is we begin on why it's important population and demographic data to governance, Rotimi.
Yes, so we already mentioned that any country that does not take population and demographic data into consideration in planning, it results in poor governance. So let us give an example so everybody can understand what is happening here. So you recall Ahoho because you were the chair or MC for the occasion at the Nigeria Info Security Summit, which held last year.
Very true.
Where, yes, and if you haven't seen the videos of that summit, please you know, look at Nigeria Info FM. I think the team would have posted it long ago on Facebook of Nigeria Info FM.
Right. It's also
the full summit is there.
Yeah.
Yes, and also on the website at Nigeria Info FM. Mm. And there are clips of it on at Rotimi Sankore or at Public Square NG. Just search for Nigeria Info Security Summit. Now, as I was explaining there, a country like France, which was a colonial master in 1960, was the same population with Nigeria, about 45 million. So France and Nigeria in 1960 were roughly 45 million each. By 2000, the population of France had only grown by 15 million, 1.5, between 1960 and 2000. 1.5 million, the population of France had grown in that 50-year period. The population of Nigeria had grown by 146 million. 146 million in the 50 years. So as I asked at the summit, what did they think was going to happen in Nigeria if the investment in human capacity especially did not match the population growth? So if you allow your population to grow exponentially, you must make sure that you are building schools, primary, secondary, university, training teachers at all levels, making sure your electricity keeps up. As everybody knows, we say repeatedly, we explain what the global standards are. The global standard for sustainable development is 1,000 megawatts per 1 million people. 1,000 megawatts per 1 million. So Nigeria should be at least 200,000 megawatts. Mm. We are at 5,000. And when the grid collapses, we're at zero. So there is a deficit of at least 195,000 megawatts. So how did the ruling classes, both military and civilian, since 1960, how did they think we are going to power the industrial growth? That we provide the jobs? Again, as I was tweeting this morning, that if you look at the kind of situation that we are in Nigeria, you will see very badly 60 million adults can't read or write. They haven't had access to literacy. Roughly 100 million in multidimensional poverty. Unemployment, 33%. Underemployment, 22%. Youth unemployment, 42%. That's about 22 million plus youth. Wanting to work, looking for work, cannot find work. So how will we have peace and stability if the governments have failed to do the necessary? Whether it was, you know, Gowon or Murtala or Obasanjo when he was military dictator, or Shagari, a very incompetent and corrupt regime overthrown by Buhari and Idi Agbon when Buhari was a military dictator. Whether it was Babangida that overthrew Buhari. Of course, the June 12th, we know what happened. That wasn't even allowed to take off. We had Shonekan, who had no business there. Then Abacha, arguably the most criminal of all the heads of state in this country. Then Abdul Salam, who was just in a hurry to hand over to civilian regime. And Obasanjo was sprung from jail and handed the presidency. And after that, Yar'Adua, Goodluck Jonathan, then Buhari as elected president. What have they been doing? We've had so much time so much time to make the investment to match the population growth. So, first of all, the population should not have grown like that. The reason it grew like that compared to France, which I mentioned earlier, is because of inequality. There was no clear policy for all girls to be in school for 6 years of primary, 6 years of secondary at the minimum, up to the age of 18. No clear policy. Instead, girls were pushed out of education, some in the name of, you know, gender discrimination, some in the name of negative culture, some in the name of negative practices of religion, and we are forced to start having children when they were 12, 13, 14. So we have this problem now that although the fertility rates for the country average is just over 5 children per woman, there are states in which the average is 7 per woman. Average. In reality, many of those girls start at 12, 13. By the time they are 30, they have had 9, 10, 11, 12 children. When you multiply by polygamy, each man in many states has 25, 30, 32 children. We saw the dishonorable gentleman in the House of Assembly, a member boasting that he has 32 children and more are coming, and that he brought the 4 wives to show he's a strong man. When the recess came, Speaker Gbajabiamila said, well, we have a recess coming now so that those of you that have 32 or more children can go and get to know some of them and figure out how you are going to provide for their education. So that is where we are now, because of gender inequality, excluding girls from education, forcefully impregnating millions of girls. The fertility rate has jumped, and even for the adult women who are educated and who are in relationship, the access to family planning is not as much as it was. Anyone that remembers the program with Sheriff last year on Family Planning Day will remember all the details. Even in Lagos, the access to family planning is minuscule, even though it is the highest. You know, there are states where access to family planning is 2%, 3%, 4%. Lagos is not up to 50. So these are the reasons, you know, if you don't make deliberate effort to plan for population growth, and the population growth is exponential, and at the same time, the investment in education, health, electricity, water, food, and everything doesn't keep up, then you have the problem called Nigeria.
It's incredible. Which takes us to our next question. You know, so as you're going through, I'm just going through my mind the things that I did in school, you know, together with other students, having to go from neighborhood to neighborhood, gathering demographic data of number of people in the household, number of income, number of this, so that we could create planning models. And to imagine that if you design the neighborhood, say, for 1,000 people, you know how many waste bins you should have, you know how many health centers you should have. Based on the population you had for last year and the one for this year, you can project how many health centers you should have in case the population growth rate is high. You're thinking of the children who are coming in the next 5 years. What health centers, what schools are they going to be? What is the demographic population? Are they below 18? If they're below 18, are you going to create more playgrounds? I mean, it's you're going to fail your course if you didn't have all of these details if you're planning for the city. Which takes us to this one, Rotimi. States and local government, how does this apply to them?
So this is where the disaster is, Ahor. If we think things are bad at federal level and that the lady in charge of Ministry of Planning, that no planning is going there, at the state level, honestly, we might as well not have 36 commissioners of planning. We might as well not have. The local governments to a certain extent, have been crushed by the state governments. So I hope everybody knows that every local government should have councillors that are responsible for planning. The councillors should have portfolio. In your local government, there should be a councillor in charge of education, a councillor in charge of health, a councillor in charge of planning, a councillor in charge of equality, and so forth like that. The local governments have been crushed. Many of the state's governors crushed them and appointed administrators. Some just ensured that during the election, the ruling party won 100% of the seats, imposed 2Gs there, and those ones have no independent ability to plan. So, for instance, in Lagos, those terrible floods that everybody suffered last week is a result of state and local government failure. I know many people are thinking of clearing the drainages, but that's not where the problem started.
At all.
The problem started because every local government should have a water treatment plant that supplies pipe-borne water to all buildings in their local government. That's how it is in all developed countries. Go to New York, go to London, go to Amsterdam, go to Beijing, go to anywhere. All the local governments have water treatment plants that supply pipe-borne water to every building. That's why they don't have boreholes. That's why they don't have Merua. And more importantly, that's why they don't have such a pure water and bottled water. Now, the failure to supply the pipe-borne water to every building by the local government and the state government means that the estimated 20 million people in Lagos all buy between 3, 4, or 5 sachets of pure water a day and 3, 4, or 5 bottles of water a day, plastic bottle. We haven't counted the poverty level yet, which means that every other thing is in sachet. Sachet milk, sachet vegetable oil, sachet ogogoro. Even the rich people are buying Irish cream now in sachet. They can't afford the bottle. So every day, there are about 60 to 80 million pieces of plastic thrown into the drainages. 60 to 80 million pieces of plastic thrown into the drainages daily. On top of that, the local governments don't have the capacity to do their own drainage clearance and refuse collection. Instead, you have Loma, Shokoma, Adamawa, Enuguma, and all kinds of strangely named entities. There is no developed country in the world where the local governments are not the ones doing the drainage, rubbish collection, and drainage cleaning. It's a local government thing. Go to the boroughs in New York or London. They call them borough, not local government. That is what they do. So when people are shouting, Joe Igbokwe, special advisor on drainage, what is happening? They miss the point.
In fact, Rotimi, just to...
Joe Igbokwe may not be doing his work, but the people who are supposed to supply the water through pipe-borne water fail to do theirs.
So, Rotimi, just to even point out, I mean, something which is very obvious, I mean, people who live, who work and live on the island, if you work from the island, say you move from the island Amadou Bello, or you take Adjosa Adeogun where we are off, and walk all the way to Marina, you cannot see any public waste bin, I dare say. If you see a public restroom, you can't find any public waste bin all the way down, which is abnormal, because, you know, the question should be, how do you expect people to dispose of the waste if you don't have public waste bins measured, and there are meters which you measure
is normal waste.
Normal waste, too. Yes.
Not the 60 million pieces of plastic. Because if every building has pipe-borne water, the sachet water industry would not have grown. So before anybody say, but they are providing job, actually, if every local government had a water treatment plant, there would be water engineers with job, water technicians, microbiologists, And a whole, I mean, how do we think in the developed world that they provide jobs?
Hmm.
That's how they provide jobs. The transport network in any big urban city in a developed country provides tens of thousands of jobs.
Yes.
Driving train, maintaining train, maintaining track, maintaining signal, bridges, connection with buses and things like that.
Yes.
Water treatment, engineers, technicians, microbiologists, you know, the electricity sector.
Yes.
Employs tens of thousands of people. Imagine if we added the 195,000 megawatt deficit.
Mm. That's massive.
We'll be looking for engineers and technicians.
Absolutely.
The fabrication of the substations, of the high tension wires, of the transformers and things will generate thousands of jobs. Even at the ordinary 5,000, we are importing all those things. Remember when more than 100 containers for NEPA got lost in the ports. So, you know, so that failure at state and local government level is terrible. And it is underlined by the fact that it is the local government that are supposed to be collecting the primary data for planning. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier from your training in uni about how local government should be planning for schools and things.
Yeah.
So if there is a local government in Lagos or anywhere today where, say, for instance, there are 20 primary schools, but say this year, an extra 5,000 children are born, more than the 20 primary schools can accommodate, the job of the local government is to start planning, in 5 or 6 years, when those extra thousands of children are to start school, how many classrooms do you need? How many teachers do you need?
Right.
They start mobilizing for the training of the teachers and the building of the schools. They have 5 or 6 years to do it.
Right. So what to be?
Oh, they will be in secondary school in 11 years. Uh-huh. Then they plan the same thing. If you ask, if you ask any local government chair now or any governor, how many primary and secondary schools are in a particular local government? They don't know. How many should be there? They don't know.
Hmm.
So what happens in the Northeast and the Northwest especially, where you know the population growth has skyrocketed for the reasons I mentioned earlier around gender inequality, forced child marriage, and so forth.
Yeah.
What happens essentially is that tens of thousands of children grow up, and you know, because it has large geographical area in Northeast and Northwest, tens of thousands of children grow up without a school in walking distance.
Mm.
So the extremists and the bandits have a playground to recruit from.
Which is where we're going to go to next, Rotimi. In case you just joined us on Public Square, it's a Population Day special. Well, the World Population Day was observed on Monday, but we are having the discussion today. And this is in partnership with the Africa Center for Development Journalism and with support from the MacArthur Foundation. And we're going to get to the interesting, but don't forget, you're going to also have the opportunity to contribute to the conversation. I'm seeing messages already up on WhatsApp. I'm very familiar, Rotimi, with the breakdown of the society when you have an unplanned population. I love to use the example of Festac and Abuja, the main Abuja, which was planned for 340,000 people. Sorry, 3.4 million people, maximum population. The fire exceeded that number now. Festac is even a worst case. 60,000 people. Those of you who stay in Festac, that's what this number of people was planned for in 1977. 40 years down, more than 40 years down the line, that number is over a million, but you don't have an expansion of facilities or structure, any of those things. And people keep complaining. The road is breaking down every moment. It's because you are living in an unplanned neighborhood. It was never the design for those sort of spaces. But there's even, Rotimi, a bigger concern for us now, which is where we are headed to, the consequences of the failure to have population and demographic linked together in planning, which is what we're seeing now, especially in the Northeast and Northwest.
Yes, we already gave the example of why the a small rain in Lagos results in turning everywhere into mini lakes. Yeah. Where four-wheel drive are swept away by the rain.
Yeah.
People bring out canoe at Adekunle and things like that.
Yeah.
Some people are swimming and so forth. We already explained the consequences in urban areas like Lagos.
Yeah.
Now, don't forget, there are 2 million children out of school in Lagos.
Mm.
That data is from the state SUBEB, the basic education folks.
Mm.
In Lagos, we are a bit lucky. Because Lagos is a bit more industrialized, we have a port, international airport. It is small and very densely populated.
Yeah.
So a lot of those 2 million kids out of school in Lagos are getting work as a vulcanizer, as bus conductor, selling gala in traffic, or as they say in Yoruba, one co-washer.
Mm.
That is, they are doing all kinds of handiwork and so forth.
Yes.
However, there is a limit to how much that can be soaked up by 20 million people.
Mm.
And after some time, as we are seeing in some areas now, the street gangs are getting bigger, bolder. I mean, one even projected into the future. I wonder if they have a population expert in that gang. They claim that they are 1 million boys, even though they are not 1 million yet, but already they are trying to anticipate what their strength may be in the future.
Mm.
So you can see those kind of problems happening. There are areas where they say cult, gang, and so forth. However, it is in the northeast and northwest, with the large geographical area, that we have seen the biggest consequences of the failure to plan at local and state, local government and state level.
Mm.
So much so that the two biggest security problems that we have in Nigeria today are as result as, you know, complete failure to provide primary and secondary education.
Mm.
So let me give context. So recently, I think last week, SERAP sued the state governments for not providing education for poor children, children of the poor, but rather diverting the security vote and other amounts into their pockets through pension for life, health benefit of 15, 20 million a year, one house in Lagos, one house in Abuja, driver, security, all kinds of things like that. All the 36 governors, I think there is only one that said he rejected the thing. He's running for president now. So let's not overhype him.
Mm.
You know, you all know who the fellow is. And I think another one from Kwara, who, when it was pointed out to him that he was collecting that kind of pension in Kwara while he was in the Senate, stopped the pension from Kwara. You know, the rest of them, you know, enjoy all this, you know, double salary, double benefit, pension, all kinds of things like that, instead of investing the money in education.
Mm.
Now, what we did was to try and explain the context, or what we are going to do, try and explain the context for that setup action. So, in some of the states most affected by the security or insecurity, just listen to the figures. So, in Zamfara, only 16% of all men have managed to complete secondary school. 16% of all men. In other words, 84% of men in Zamfara have not completed secondary school. In Katsina is 22%. In Borno is 22%. And listeners will remember when we talked about Boko Haram in the past that at the height of the Boko Haram insurgency, 63% of males in Borno had never seen the inside of a classroom. In Yobe, 83%. So when the local governments and the state governors fail to invest in primary and secondary education for several decades, so this is not, we are not talking of the immediate past governor.
Right.
These kind of things take 30 or 40 years to accumulate. So when you have that kind of situation now, and then the bandits and extremists are able to recruit wildly from among those kids, then they start calling on the federal government to send soldiers to come and save them. So the money supposed to be used to invest in the development of the country is now being put into military expenditure to contain bandits and extremists, because local government and state governments failed for 30 or 40 years to provide basic primary or secondary education. So, you know, this is the kind of consequence of this kind of nonsense. So people who don't understand will be like, we need more soldier, we need more helicopter, we need more Tucano jets, we need more this. Now the Tucano jets is costing $200 billion. Meanwhile, the agreement between ASU and the federal government is that the same $200 billion should be invested to revitalize university annually for 6 years. So no laboratory in the university, no library, 10 to 20 students per room, you know, no water, no this, no that. That $200 billion is going for Tucano and so forth, because state and local government didn't, you know, and Minister Ngige is busy trying to explain, you know, that they gave $40 billion already, ASU should be happy, they should go back to, I mean, to do what?
Do what? So wrote to me, because we, I mean, this is Population Studies 101, and we'll try as much as possible to skirt around the most important factors here and give you an understanding of what the real issues are. Another relationship we're going to explore and see how it interacts is between gender and women's rights, and then population and demographic data. So those of you sending messages on WhatsApp about reproduction, this explanation will help you greatly. So look at the implications of fertility rate and then population replacement rate. Quite a number to unpack here.
So yes, so to summarize, all those countries like France, Britain, Netherlands and so forth, that were roughly the same or less population than Nigeria in 1945, in 1960, when Nigeria was 45 million, and in 50 or 60 years, their populations have only grown by between 15 and 20 million, whereas Nigeria's population in the same period, as we explained, has grown by over 146 million. What was happening in those countries was that they just had replacement rates. So each couple just has two children.
Right.
So that's what's called replacement rate. Two parents, two children. When the parents grow old, pass away, you know, the life expectancy in those countries is in the late 70s and early 80s, of between 79 and 83 years old. They pass away, they leave two children. Let's remind, Nigeria has the fourth lowest life expectancy in the world, if you didn't know. Fourth lowest life expectancy in the world. So in those countries, two parents pass on, two children. So if the total fertility rate per woman in those countries is two, then it is a stable replacement rate. If the fertility rate in your country is five or six per woman, or in some states, seven to 12 per woman, then the population goes through the roof. And as we explained, the way to stop that, and I always underline, as a man, even if you do not believe that women are equal to you, even if you don't believe women are equal to you, which is, I think, is funny, because if you went to school, you, we know girls in your class who were as intelligent as you or more intelligent than you. So intelligence is not based on gender. But even if you don't agree for cultural or religious reasons or whatever, surely your common sense must tell you that if you do not ensure that the girls go to school, minimum of secondary school up to the age of 18, then they will be forced to start having children when they are young. Mm. And the consequences will be insecurity, hunger, and all kinds of things. Not surprisingly, Katsina State, which has the highest total fertility in the country, it also has the highest hunger and malnutrition.
Right.
The data is from the federal government National Nutrition Report. The hunger and malnutrition in Katsina is 58%.
And just to tell people in plain terms, if you have malnutrition, you know what they say, you no go hear word. It cannot hear word. You know?
The consequence of malnutrition and stunting at the age of 5 years old is that your intellectual ability stops. So your cognitive ability ends. So right. You can be grown up, but your mentality will be that of a 5 year old. That's why the people who say about people from some part of the country, they only hear go, they don't hear come. It has nothing to do with the individuals. It's not their fault.
Mm.
They suffer hunger, malnutrition as children. On top of it, no remedial, no remedial policy. Even basic education, they didn't have. So it's not an ethnic problem. It's a governance failure.
Mm.
You know, so the idea that if the president comes from your village, you will be better off. Look at Katsina, 58% hunger and malnutrition. That is government data.
Yeah.
Highest birth rate in the country. Right. Government data.
Absolutely. So Rotimi, we've...
So I just wanted to say, so, you know, these are the issues. Yeah. Fertility rates, you know, and so, you know, really impacts. And it means that the local government should be the ones campaigning closest to the people to end the first child marriage, ensure the girls go to school, build the primary and secondary schools,
good,
supported by the federal, by the state government.
Right.
The federal government should be leading.
Mm.
Should be leading. So when there is banditry, I mean, check all the headlines yesterday and today.
Yeah.
The president has called the security chief, told them, wipe out the bandit and terrorists, finish them completely. Every time there is a new bandit problem, that is what he says.
In fact, Rotimi,
he has never told the Minister of Education, summon all the 36 commissioners of education.
Right.
And point out to them that proportional to their states, these are the states where the 13 million children out of school are.
Right.
And we need to fix that problem so that the banditry and extremism will not get worse in the future.
In fact, Rotimi, as you speak, you know, we've talked a lot about ungoverned spaces and ungoverned spaces being manned by non-state actors. And with every month passing by, you sort of get stories that stunts you. The latest I heard, I'm just seeing now, is an attack happened in Kaduna State between Ansaru, a terrorist group, and the bandits. The Ansaru
are now fighting for control of space.
Good, exactly. So the Ansaru,
the state government and the local governments have disappeared.
Yeah. The Ansaru terrorist group was preaching to the people in the neighborhood, and the bandits came to fight them. They fought off the bandits, and then they came back to continue preaching to the people and told them that we have defended you. We are going to continue to defend you. This is what's going on in ungoverned spaces, you know, that we talk about. And it's strange, but if we don't deal with the population and understand it, which is what we've done here, it's the eighth wonder of the world, how we've been able to pack all of this into 45 minutes, but we try. I think what we're going to do is we're going to open the phone lines and get a feeling of what the people have to say. Everyone who's going to call in, you have at least a minute to contribute to this. 0700-993-993-993. Again, 0700-993-993-993. And then on WhatsApp, 0809-597-5805. And then on social media, it's at Public Square NG, Rotimi Sankore, at Aworo Obo, at Nigeria Info FM. So please, you go straight to the point in 1 minute max, so we can hear what you have to say.
Some of the food.
Okay. Sorry about that. Hello and good evening.
Yeah, Chief Obo, good evening, sir.
Uh-huh. Great to have you join us.
Makushi.
Please go ahead.
Sir, good evening, sir.
Hello, good evening, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you. Chief Obo.
Yeah, go ahead.
These people that will call and giving kudos to the government, I wish they are listening to what Sarutin is explaining. Hello, Chief Obo.
Yeah, go ahead. Quick.
So please, I want those people to come out and tell me the type of kudos they are giving. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Hello and good evening.
Hello. Oh, good evening.
Aha, good evening. Your name, please, and where you're calling from.
This is Happiness from Ikorodu.
All right, Happiness. Go ahead quickly.
Yes, my question is, these people, are they really listening to Sarutini? Are they really listening to this program? Because it's really alarming, you know. I don't know. Oh, please, are they listening to us?
Well, we hope they are listening. Thank you very much, Happiness. Hello and good evening. Hello, good evening. All right. Go to a quiet place, please. There's too much noise at the background. Hello and good evening.
Yeah, hello. Good evening.
Aha, great to have you join us. Your name, please, and where you're calling from?
My name is Oche. I'm calling from Ikeja. Ogareti, may I greet you, sir?
Hello,
now,
sir.
I've listened to your analysis, sir. There's one thing I would have wanted you to do for us, even though some of us already know. But for emphasis, coming from you, it will probably establish it as a statement of fact. If you can give us the breakdown of where the so-called population, the large numbers, where they are more prevalent, in what part of the country, where this level of poverty is prevalent, what part of the country, statistics, if possible, state by state, region by region. Because Ogaro Timi, let me tell you the truth. However anybody wants to say it, I'm not going to be, let nobody, it's not hate speech, but one region of this country will sink the rest of this country. Have a nice evening.
All right, thank you, Uche, for your comments. No one on that line. Hello and good evening.
Hello, good evening.
Great to have you join us. What's your name, please, and where are you calling from?
This call is calling from Badagry.
All right, Collins, go ahead quickly.
Good evening, sir. I seriously wish for Nigeria. This is a big issue that I don't know what to say. All the things Sarutini just said, it touched my heart. We need to really work in this country, most especially our leaders. I hope they are listening and they can plan towards all these issues we raise. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much, Collins. Hello and good evening. Hello and good evening.
Hello.
Aha, great to have you join us. What's your name, please, and where are you calling from?
This is Mr. Victor Christopher. I'm calling from Alagbodi Okuche.
All right, Victor, go ahead, please.
A nice work that you are doing there. May God bless you. Please, I want to say exactly thing where Brother Oche said it. Please, if you can give us the breakdown, I would be very happy, sir.
All right. Thank you very much. Hello and good evening.
Hello,
good evening.
Hello.
All right.
Oh, sorry. Hello, good evening.
Great. Your name, please, and where are you calling from?
All right. This is Pastor Ladipo calling from Orilegum.
Good. Pastor Ladipo, go ahead.
Please, I want to beg Rotimi Sankoy.
Right.
Some of this data that is rolling out, is it possible for it to be published? So that when it is published, maybe those who are not privileged to listen, especially in the up north, there and this side, it can be visible for them to see, so that we can begin to do something about it, because it's even scary. Thank you, and God bless Nigeria.
All right, thank you very much, Pastor Ladipo. So, Ruth, I got a lot of messages here on WhatsApp. I just will go through them in quick time. On Nigeria's population data, unfortunately, Nigeria is unable to harness the advantages of its large population. And except we stem it, increasing poverty will remain our lot. I suggest the following as a measure. Family planning should focus on the male and not the female. No girl below the age of 18 should be permitted to marry, but rather go to school until they are 18. That is from Olu. Then, this is Peter Ayorinde from Anthony. He says, as a geography and planning academia, when I announced today's topic, he said that I said this is Rotimi's favorite topic. I said development scientists, demography and human geography should be paramount to any development scientist. Some people may doubt Nigeria's population figures as being inflated. I tell them they don't know Nigeria so well. I tell them that if in One area, 1 million parents have at least 4 children in 10 years. 2 million adults will have 6 million at minimum in population. That's 6 times already. Don't forget that mortality rate is a fraction of our birth rate. I believe our population is aggregately correct, but we don't plan for them. One should be strength is becoming, is rather counting down, C4 counting down explosive. Thank you very much. Our population will grow without control because some political figures, he says, in the north, enjoy this large family structure. Last Sallah holiday, the governor of Zamfara displayed a picture of his 30 children. He's not an illiterate, but educated. Why do these things happen in this way? A man like this will not educate people about birth control. It's a pity we're in this situation. Can, from Agbado. Rotman, I think we take one more message and you have to deal with it because we have so much. This is Kenneth. He writes, Rotmi opened my eyes today. But I want him to mention names of the two individuals that refused to collect all their monies. Some people collect after leaving office. You mentioned one of them came from Kwara State, Obi. Where did Obi come from? He said this. Kenneth. All right, Rotmi. I don't know how we're going to deal with all these messages because there's so many. I don't know. I guess we just...
we'll try and pack everything into 3 or 4 minutes.
All right, go ahead, please.
I mean, the last question, which is now related to population and development, but which is more of an ethical thing. Peter Obi is one of the governors that rejected the humongous pension for life. The other person that stopped his own after it was pointed out to him that these are the consequences was Saraki.
Mm.
So he then announced that henceforth he will no longer collect that humongous pension and all the benefits.
Mm.
But he was Senate president already then.
Mm.
But still an example for others to follow. So that's two we know out of the 36 since 1999.
Mm.
Now, as regards which states these problems are mainly, have they been published? Yes. I mean, a lot of the data that we work with is published.
Mm.
A lot of it is from the state ministries of education, for instance, Federal Ministry of Education, Population Council, Demographic Health Survey, MIX, and so forth. Some even from the development agencies.
Mm.
Yes, the Bureau of Statistics and so forth.
Mm.
Now, do they make it public? No. Do they do public education on it? No.
No.
So you have to go and find it. But most importantly, you have to have the capacity and the training to cross and because you can be looking at the data set and it doesn't make sense to you. But if you have the training and experience and you've worked on these things, I mean, fortunately, somebody like me, you know, this is what I did for like 20 years across Africa, internationally. So I see one data set. I know the implications already. So let me just mention, indulge me. If you follow me on Twitter at Rotimi Sankore, you would have seen a lot of this. If you would like to see more, follow the colleagues at Center for Development Journalism at dev_journalism. You will see more in the future. Now, just to mention quickly, where is the rate of first child marriage highest that drives the population growth? It's in the Northwest. So just to mention a few states, so Zamfara and Katsina, Zamfara is at 71.4%. Of first child marriage, that is, all the girls and women in Zamfara, 71.4% were forced into child marriage, 71.4% before the age of 18.
Right.
In Katsina, it is 70.9. Then if you look at the surrounding states like Sokoto, Kebbi, Kano, and so forth, it's sort of 65% to 68%. In the Northeast, slightly less and so forth. But don't forget, it happens in Lagos.
All right,
it's 8.3% in Lagos.
Ritmi,
and that figure, 8.3% of 20 million.
Rotu, let's do this. We go on this break so we can have the news. Yvonne is already in, and after the news, I think we spare maybe 5 minutes or thereabout to address the remainder. Still Public Square on 99.3 Nigeria Info. We have the headline news, and after the headline news, we continue with Public Square.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is the Public Square.
Well, welcome back, 99.3 Nigeria Info Public Square. You're on your number one talk news and sports station. I'm Awoko Obu, and together with Rotimi Sankore, we've had a very intense 1 hour engaging with a number of you still sending in the messages. Don't forget, you can talk with us on social media at Nigeria Info FM, at Public Square NG, at Rotimi Sankore, at Awoko Obu. On WhatsApp, it's 0809-597-5805. Again, 0809-597-5805. And it's just messages on WhatsApp. And we open the phone lines also, too, at some point again during the course of the conversation. So Rot, we're supposed to go move into another gear for the second half, but we still have some unfinished business, it appears, with the population. So what do you say we do before we move into...
For the esteemed listeners that we are saying, say what the states are, we can just mention them in 2 or 3 minutes.
Good.
Okay. So I was already mentioning where the first child marriage, for instance, is highest.
Right.
In other words, where the girls have least access to school and education, and where they are forced to start having children much earlier. And I was explaining that Zamfara is 71%, Katsina 70%, that is 71% and 70% of all girls and women are forced to start having children when they are children, from the ages of 12, 13, 14, and so forth like that. But I was making the point that Lagos is not immune. In Lagos, first child marriage is 8.3%. Now remember that this is 8.3% of a population of 20 million. So if there are 10 million women or females in Lagos, 8.3% of 10 million is high. I mean, to make it easy for those who don't really follow data and statistics, 10% of 10 million females in Lagos, the absolute number, 10% of 10 million, is higher than, say, 50% of 1 million.
Very true.
So if, if there are states where the overall population is 3 or 4 million, and the first child marriage there is 70%, as a proportion of the population, it has more impact there. Whereas 8% in Lagos as a proportion of the population has less impact. But it is 10% of 10 million, which means that in absolute number, it is often higher than in many of the northern states. The only advantage is that you see them selling groundnut on the streets, selling tomato, walking about when they should be in school, often being assaulted by unscrupulous men, and so forth like that. But as a proportion of the population of the state, there is less impact. Not that it doesn't happen. So please, nobody should imagine that good Christian gentlemen do not indulge in first child marriage. Don't think it is a northern or Muslim problem. Remember at the time of Ese Oruru, the girl from Rivers of Bayelsa that was captured by one guy called Yunusa, and the thing sparked a national outcry. At that time, first child marriage in Bayelsa was 50%, one in two girls. So the nice Christian gentleman of Bayelsa had been doing it, and nobody complained until Yunusa captured one of their children, and then it became a matter. Yeah, he wants to Islamize her. But the ones that have been Christianizing and abusing the girls, nobody complained. So, I mean, that's a quick example. Now, consequently, the birth rate is highest in Sokoto, Zamfara, Katsina, Jigawa, Kano, Kebbi, and so forth, roughly between 6.5 to 7.3 average births per woman. Katsina is the highest, 7.3. So the states around them, Kaduna, Gombe, Adamawa, Niger states, and so forth, are roughly 5 to 6. So that is average. In reality, it is more like 6 to 10. So, I mean, that is that. Now, in terms of family planning, for the grown-up women who went to school and relationship, want to space the children, want to decide when to have children, if to have children, and so forth, the family planning is lowest in the Northeast and Northwest. The states with the lowest access to modern family planning are states like Sokoto, 2%, Katsina, 3%, Yobe, 2%, Kebbi, 3%, Borno, 5%, really low. Less than 10% in most of the Northeast and Northwest access to family planning. But again, in Lagos, where we think we are modern and educated and enlightened, the access to modern family planning is 29%. 29%. So it's better in Lagos, but it is not what it should be. And the consequences for poverty, underdevelopment, and so forth is high. Look, men should know. Men can have almost consequence-free sex, even in marriage. But for a woman who wants to, or a girl that wants to go to school, so if you are in university, college of education, you are married, you know, a sexual encounter with your husband or partner can ruin your career. It can ruin your education. It can mean you drop out of uni, end your master's degree or whatever, because you don't have access to family planning. It means that if you're a woman working as a doctor, a nurse, an engineer, a teacher, a pilot, or whatever the case may be, if you don't have access to family planning, you may end up having 3, 4, 5 children. Your male colleagues will proceed. Now, what does that happen? It pushes Nigeria into poverty and underdevelopment. So if you look at those countries where people want to jack back to Canada and places like that, what is the main thing they have there that is providing the prosperity? The girls and women have 100% access to education. So they have more women and girls educated, more women working, more people earning, you know. So if you get pregnant, you have 2 children over your lifetime, you get paid leave, you know, of, you know, 3 to 6 months, depending on the country, and so forth like that. So these are the issues, you know. So you can see mostly these issues have to do with gender and women rights and so forth. So I always tell people, even if you don't think for any reason that culturally or religiously that women are equal to, even if you don't think so, and I don't see any reason why you shouldn't. Think of the development trajectory of your country and the consequences you will suffer if you do not acknowledge the rights and girls and women to go to education, to go to school, to have family planning, to, you know, and so forth like that. The consequences are horrendous.
All right, Rotimi. So I think now.
So that's the summary.
Yeah. That's a summary, and I hope those of you who send in the comments on WhatsApp also too, do us a favor and put them up on Twitter also too, so that we can see them. I see all your messages. Ahmed from Victoria Island says, "Road to be always making a positive impact on the society at large." It is left for those self-centered politicians to make a U-turn. And talking about making a turn, we're going to go to the politics now. And for the next couple of minutes, we are going to look at one deadline, which has finally passed, which is with the presidential candidates and their running mates. There's a deadline actually supposed to go up today, which is for the governorship candidates and their vice and their deputy governorship candidates and some other positions within the state assemblies, which INEC had made, had said that deadline is going to expire by 6 p.m. today. So it'll be interesting to see those who have followed the guidelines or those who have not. So, Rotimi, we have now the presidential candidates, at least, and their vice presidential candidates. No more placeholders, I hope. And
yes.
Yes.
I mean, a quick, light-hearted comment on Lagos, if you don't mind. So, in Lagos, the PDP governorship candidates announced Funke Akindele as his running mate. And I can see a lot of people like, you know, why? You know, what's your... Guys, you know, I mean, as I assume everybody should know, I am not a fan of PDP or APC, so it's not a campaign for either of them. I mean, none of those parties has met the standards of governance in Nigeria, you know. But I should mention, as a matter of voter and governance literacy, if you are voting for somebody that is an actor or a musician or so forth, you know, so people like Banky W, who is an actor, is an artist, people like Funke Akindele, who is a producer, actor, you are not voting for Jennifer. It's important. Yes, it's not Jennifer. Funke Akindele is a lawyer that happens to be a movie producer. So I can see a lot of people on social media. How can Jennifer be the deputy governor? It's not Jennifer that if they win, we move into the house.
Interestingly, a lot of shows on the station this morning, people have not called her by her name. They've called her Jennifer. Jennifer is contested for deputy governor.
Yes, and if Banky W wins House of Reps, I believe the nomination matter has been resolved.
Yeah.
If he wins, he is not going to sing and dance in the National Assembly.
I mean, but Ruth, just to take people's minds back a little bit, Fela's Movement of the People, it was a real political party with manifestos and everything, you know.
Oh, yes, and, yes,
I've
yes.
I've seen a lot of those documents.
Yes. Anyway, so look, everybody who knows me knows that I like Fela's music, you know, for the social commentary and so forth like that. When Fela launched Movement of the People, people looked at Fela a lot. You know, all these colonially imposed ethics and so forth like that, Movement of People, very good manifesto, everything, but Fela as president seemed a bit of a stretch. So, yes, the person's real life persona can impact on the perception of the person.
Yeah.
That is quite true for an artist. But for an actor, that is a role the person is playing. I mean, in Fela's case, that was not a role. His real life persona was his real life persona, full stop.
Right.
But for an actor playing a role, it is not the character you are voting for, it is the real person, you know? So it's just a lighthearted comment, you know? But anyway, let's go to the federal level. Where I'm sure everybody must have heard now that Kwakwanso of NMPP has selected Archbishop Ida Hosa as his vice presidential running mate. Now, honestly, still on a lighter note, the first thing that came to my mind was, what was the criteria that Kwakwanso was calculating? Is it that they will be running crusades across the country, you know, and how are they going to appear? Yes, because look, anybody has the right to aspire to any position, but if you are choosing a running mate or as a voter, you are looking at candidates, you need to be looking at one. What is their professional training? Are they bringing anything to the table? Are they lawyers, engineers, doctors? I mean, what is the peculiarity they have? What is their administrative competence? If they have experience, is that experience good or bad? So when some people say, we have 20 years experience, more than the other guy, you need to check that 20 years experience. What did the person do? Is it 20 years of a hand in the kitty jar? Or what? So, you know, Ida Hosa, okay, you know, fans of Kwakwanso may not mind, But, you know, I struggle to figure out what is the... So, I mean, the vice president is the president in waiting. So, if Papanso travels out of the country, is indisposed or whatever, and Idahosa becomes president, you know, what are we getting there?
Mm.
You know, what are we getting? I mean, I asked the same question when Jonathan was nominated for Yaradua. Well, what are we getting? Many people ask the same question when Oshibanjo was nominated for Buhari. What are we getting?
Mm.
You know, so, I mean, you ask the question yourself, what does Idahosa bring to the table?
Right.
If you think he's okay, then of course, vote for them. And if you think he's not, then you vote for any other person you think works for you.
Right.
You know? Now, a quick update on APC. It's not clear what is happening. Shettima, the former governor of Borno State, yes, was going to be unveiled, but now APC is reportedly delaying the unveiling.
Mm.
It's not clear why. I mean, if you look at a lot of the papers today, I mean, The Guardian today, that was their biggest story. So is it the Christian backlash? You know, is it that his principal may not be available? You know, I mean, why did APC postpone the unveiling of Shettima?
Mm.
You know, I mean, it is not clear, but because at least a week has passed since he was unveiled, I think everybody has had more than enough of the analysis of Muslim or so forth. Of course, if Tinubu is your preferred candidate, then it's not an issue for you, whether it's Muslim.
Mm.
But if you are one of those that is concerned about the perceived Muslim domination, this may be an issue. And, you know, this issue has been made worse by the lynching of Deborah in Sokoto State, you know, and things like that, you know, and this lopsided appointment in some offices.
Mm.
That, you know, where it's perceived that more Muslims are appointed than Christians. And for the young people, the sense of disenfranchisement with things like common entrance exams, that why do some states, say like for unity schools, some states, their cutoff mark is as low as two.
Mm.
Two, which really is a failure.
Yeah.
You know, two out of 180 or 200 is failure. Because, I mean, a pass mark will be at least 50.
Uh-huh.
But from states like Anambra or Lagos or so, you have to score 120, 140, 160. And then you get into the same school and somebody that scored two is there with you. Some people perceive it as religious injustice. Some people perceive it as geographical injustice. I mean, the real reason, as we have explained, is not with the children, but that the governors fail to invest in education to raise the level to that is, you know, prevailing in other states, but they then go and negotiate for lower cutoff, having failed to invest in education.
Mm.
So they then say, oh, quota system, even if they score zero, you need to take 20% from my region, with consequences that you, when they grow up, they are now incompetent administrators. Mm. Because they don't know jack. They don't know anything. But instead of the governors and local government chairs to be held responsible, people take it out on the children themselves who don't know anything.
Mm.
So this is where some of the Muslim thing too is also coming from, for the young people that, if in quotes, they in quotes now take over, in fact, you know, a lot of problems. So, but like I said, if Tinubu is your guy, Muslim doesn't matter. I mean, Abiola did it with King Ibe. The time was different. People wanted end of military regime.
Mm.
So it was more a referendum on military regime. I've seen people going back to 1978-79 to say, you know, Awolowo had a Christian running mate. Zeke had a Christian running mate, and if either of them had won, it would have been Christian, and so forth like that. Those times were different, you know. Those times were different. Political parties now should be sensitive to the times we are in, But hey, you know, if Muslim works for you, okay, you know, you go vote. Those that it doesn't work for, we vote for the other parties, you know, and we see. You know, but people have had more than 1 week to debate and legislate on this. I don't think we can do more than the whole country has done in 1 week. You know.
Right.
So the other two main parties, not much to say. Yeah. You know, Obi has picked Dati.
Right.
Well, some people feel he's competent. Some people feel he has some baggage. You know, for instance, he was shown in the National Assembly when he was a member during Jonathan's time, saying that when the anti-gay marriage law was being passed, and people were saying, oh, they should be sentenced to 5 years, 19 years, and the man just stood up and said, in fact, they should be finished completely. They should be killed. And we are like, eh? How? You know, law, is this jungle justice? I mean, what? People are not entitled to be tried, even if the law is flawed. You are even saying they should go over and beyond. Did Obi take such things into consideration? I don't know. Do such things matter to the people that call themselves obedient or obicentric? I don't know. You know, when the votes happen, you know, we will see.
Right.
And of course, for PDP, the Okowa and Wike drama is well known because Atiku was the first person to choose his running mate. So is Okowa better than Wike? If you're a Wike supporter, of course, you won't agree. But if you think Atiku deserves another chance, then you don't care.
Yeah.
You know, who he's bringing to the table. The main thing, you know, with Edis Four or any other person, I will say, if you are trying to choose a candidate, look at who is best for the times that we are in now. Who is the best for the times we are in now, the level of underdevelopment we are facing. Who is the person that you think has more capacity to solve that problem intellectually, ethically, and otherwise. And the young people especially have a bigger say in the country than us. Us, the young people are the majority. We can't hold them back. We are on the way out. So if you have tens of millions of young people, 22 million plus unemployed, 42 million unemployment rate, and so forth, you can't be telling those young people that, you know, people who are out of touch with them are the best for them.
Right, right.
So it is who can solve the problem for young people. Now, the young people may have their view on it, and some people may think it is some of the, in quotes, more experienced people. But I think the objective thing to do is, who is the candidate that has the best capacity to solve the problem? Now, that judgment is subjective. You know, and of course, alongside them, they are vice presidential candidate. Who is carrying more baggage? Can Idahosa bring anything to the table? You know, will Shetima compound the thing, or Muslim doesn't matter? Will Dati's educational and intellectual excellence match Obi and any other view he had in the past? Doesn't matter. You know, is Okowa better than Wike? You know, all these things are for you to judge. But the point is, judge well. If you are a young person, your future is at stake.
Absolutely at stake. And also at stake is the people of Osun State in deciding who be the governor of the state for the next 4 years, because we're on the cusp of a crucial governorship election. We'll go on a quick break. When we come back, Public Square will train its lenses in Osun State for the governorship poll. Please stay with us on 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
Ladies and gentlemen,
The Public Square.
Welcome back for the final lap. How time flies when you have a great discussion. A 99.3 Nigeria in for The Public Square. I'm Awogo Obo and Rotimi Sankore. What a show. Beginning between from 4 to 5 p.m. We talked about the World Population Day, and we distilled several factors around Nigeria's population data study for people to understand just how it's affecting governance. And just before we went on the break, we're talking about the vice presidential candidate and the presidential candidate that we now know. And now we go to Osun State for the governorship election, which happens tomorrow. 1.5 million voters are going to decide the fate of the state. For the last week or thereabout, I've been speaking with Festus Okoye, the INEC National Commission on Information and Voter Education and Information, as well as the force PRO for Nigeria Police, Miwa Adejobi, on the numbers of policemen, for example, who are going to deploy 21,000. Had asked him, wrote to me, why 21,000, the magic number? He said, there's no hard way, hard or fast rule to this one. They just walked around the numbers of polling units. So they just scaled up the numbers, is how they arrived at 21,000. Will form three rings, the outer ring, the middle ring, and then the inner ring, where people will see the policemen at the polling units. And Festus Okoye dwelt a lot about how they wanted to use this to pass across the message that INEC was ready for the general elections. In other words, they want to thumb their chest at the end of this exercise to say, we did it with Ekiti and as well as Osun State. So we now have something to present to the Nigerian people for next year, that we are set for the work. But the contenders, I'm sure they've done their campaigns and they're now going to present themselves before the electorate. Well, it makes for an interesting watch, Rotimi.
Yes, 15 out of the registered political parties are contesting the Osun State governorship election. But as usual, there are some people considered to be front runners. Now, I mean, are these people considered to be front runners by everybody? I don't know, but certainly the ones that have participated in the debates, for instance, or that have the highest profile, are those considered to be front runners. So, of course, there's the incumbent governor, Oyetola, who believes he's going to win and says that the people of Osun should give him another mandate. Does he have all the support from within his party? Well, you know, the presidential candidates turned up there with many of the governors. I think there was even one very hilarious moment for me when I saw some clips on TV, on social media, of this young and garrulous artist called Portable being hired by APC to go around the stage for them. I was like, what PR guy thought of this stunt? You know, I mean, Portable, you know, I think as an artist, he attracts all the attention for himself, sometimes not in the best way, but at least he's in the news. Should a political party or candidate be bringing him out to campaign? You know, put him on a vehicle and drive around, probably not the best choice. And the guy was upfront. He said, they paid me for the job and I'm here to do what I was paid for. You know, I don't necessarily support them, you know, but they've paid me, so I'm asking you to, you know, I'm telling you what they told me to tell you. Of course, don't forget that the governor doesn't necessarily have the support of everybody. His so-called godfather, Aregbesola, who is a minister. Remember, they had a falling out, and that one, I think, was trying to suggest at some point that he shouldn't even be given the ticket again. But he won the ticket. So, you know, does that mean that the party members prefer him to Aregbesola's candidate? Yes. Well, if he won the party ticket, then that's what it means. Does it mean he will win the election? So last time around, remember the drama with Ademola Adeleke? Where there were inconclusive votes and uncounted votes. And, you know, at some point, people assumed that Adeleke was actually going to win. And when the final results came out, it was Oyetola, and Adeleke alleged that the votes were stolen and so forth. And to make the point.
In Ife.
Yes. So for Adeleke to make the point, he brought out his nephew, David O, to come and sing for him.
Mm.
And of course, you know, he's a dancing senator. So once David O started singing, the senator started with his fantastic moves to show that he's in tune with the music. Yeah. And David O was asking, are we going to allow them? I think it was in Pidgin. We go allow them do what they do last time. Well, he didn't say what they did last time, but we assume he's referring to the alleged stealing of the mandate. So will people vote for Adeleke? I don't know. I think the whole thing depends on turnout, because in most of the state elections, the turnout is pretty low. It's really disturbing. You know, nationally, in the last two elections, about 50 million people didn't vote. Mm. You know, about 50 million people didn't vote. All those that voted were roughly 30 million. About 50 million didn't vote. And that's low turnout. In the state elections, the turnout is roughly 22 to 30%.
Mm.
So the turnout may be higher this time nationally, because this new wave of INEC registration has witnessed about 10 million new registrants.
Mm.
And many of them are young people who are determined to take their future back from the older politicians who self-evidently have not been competent.
Mm.
It's not a question. I mean, many of them are my generation. Many of them are my schoolmates. Some of them have worked with them before. Self-evidently, they've not been competent. I tell them all the time when I see them, those that are in the Senate, the few that are ministers, you know, the two that have been governors, I tell them, you guys are incompetent, you know. Self-evidently, it's not an opinion. Just look at the unemployment rate and everything. So, I mean, you can imagine what the youth feel.
Mm. Mm.
So, will the turnout be higher in the states and national because of that? I don't know.
Mm.
But if the turnout is higher, Oyetola may struggle.
Mm. Mm.
Now, who will they vote for? I don't know. The third prominent person is Lassun Yusuf,
Deputy Speaker,
of the House of Reps.
Yeah.
He's running on platform of Labour Party. Will he benefit from the obedient or the obicentric factor?
Mm.
I'm not sure.
Mm.
Certainly, Labour Party has given him more profile. And for those who don't want APC or PDP, he may be the option. I mean, remember what happened in the Ekiti elections, where, in fact, one of the so-called third force parties beat PDP into third place.
Mm.
So you can't rule out that Labour Party can do the same, may come second.
Mm.
Can they win in Oshun? Oof. It's not impossible, but yeah, that's a tight one.
Yeah, I mean, it will be a history-making. Well, the Labour Party has actually won in Ondo State before, but Mimiko, by the way, then was a member of AD, and then, but then he was already very popular, because I schooled in Akure, so he was already very popular, you know, when Adefarati was the governor. In Akure especially. So was he really an unknown force? He wasn't. He was actually very well known.
So, but as you've underlined, Labour has won in Ondo before.
Yes.
And if Mimiko hadn't gone and decamped to PDP, we would have had one state Labour maybe by now, and another state APGA.
Mm.
So, you know, when politicians take those funny decisions, they don't know how it affects the trajectory of things in the country.
Mm. Mm.
So, can Lassun Yusuf win under Labour? It's tight, but not impossible. It's tight. I mean, if the electorate feel that APC has disappointed and that PDP is not the alternative that they want, then Labour Party, Lassun Yusuf, can benefit from the momentum of obedient or obicentric.
Right.
Or at least come second.
All right.
And the fourth person quickly is the accord guy, Akin Ogunbiyi. He's also not new to the scene.
Yes.
You know, I think he ran on platform of PDP once. So people know him, but you know, can Accord doesn't have any obedient or obicentric momentum to cling on to. So if he does well or wins, it will have to be on his own momentum. So I think his victory is less likely than that of Lasso of Labour Party. Yeah, I mean, that's what my informed opinion is, what I think. I mean, I don't really have data to back this, and I try to limit my comments to, you know, data, development indicators, global standards. But we are talking of election now, so it's like kalu kalu, you know, you pull the handle and you don't know. You don't know how it lines up. So will PDP and AP, or will PDP or APC win? You know, I'm not sure. Does Labour Party have a chance? Yes. Does Accord have a chance? Probably lesser than the Labour Party. So that's it on our show. If you are listening and you know better, please call and call and let us know. It's like trying to predict a football match, you know.
Talking about predictions, I asked Festus Okoye how quickly did he think the results would be uploaded on the viewing portal, because we would ask him the same question in the run up to the Ekiti election, and he had said by 6 p.m. you should see at least 50%. But interestingly, he underplayed his hand, because by 6 p.m. you already had almost 80% of the results out. So this time around, they look more confident, even though it's a bigger state than Ekiti state, but that they probably could have close to 70-80% of those results on the viewing portal by 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. So I said, okay, we come back next week and we'll analyze how technology has helped the transparency of the process.
I mean, just to mention quickly, Ahoho, you know, the data in Nigerian elections is quite poor. So if I want to tell you now how young people, women, working people voted in India over the last 20 years.
Yes.
I can tell you that in 1 hour. The demographic data is online. How young people voted, you know, which therefore gives you an idea of how they are likely to vote, how women voted, how rural people voted, how urban people voted, the demographics that political parties have influence with. Of course, things change. Things change. I mean, in the US, who would have thought 100 years ago that the Democratic Party will now be the party of the, in quotes, people, and Republicans' party of big business? Because I hope everybody knows that the Democrats in the U.S. used to be the party of slavery. They used to be the party of slave owners, you know, and it was the leaders of the Republican Party that declared the end of slavery in the U.S. Now the Republicans are the party of big business. Large factions of them are outrightly racist, hostile to migrants, people like Trump and so forth. And the Democrats are now, you know, posing as the party of black people, of migrants, of working class people. And, you know, all within a space of 100 years, the thing has turned upside down. So while political parties can transform and change based on support of different demographics or based on leadership, program, manifesto, ideology, and so forth like that, for short periods, we need the data to be able to predict. And that's one thing INEC has not been able to do, to put the data for all the elections since 1999 up. Now, if they did that, I can do more informed commentary, you know, rather than this semi-kalu-kalu that we are doing now. So, if you don't know what kalu-kalu is, it means just, you know, putting a bit of informed commentary and then rolling the dice.
But I'm impressed by what a number of civil society groups are trying to do now. So with the information coming out with the viewing portal, they can now know how certain neighborhoods and local government are voting, and they store it in a database, and they can begin to do some analysis with it, but it will take a while and it will take a lot of effort.
Yes.
Like we did notice when one station tried it, they were way, way behind the results which were being put out because it was taking them some time to aggregate all of that data. But Ruth, do you think we can squeeze in? We're out of time actually, so
we can squeeze in 3 or 4 minutes.
Okay, let's do this quickly. Hello and good evening.
Hello, how are you?
Brilliant. Yeah, your name please and where are you calling from?
Engineer Ni here from Yaba.
All right, Engineer Ni, go ahead.
Let me say thank you, Roti, Ms. Ankore, you are doing well. Last election in Osun, it was PDP won by 300, but less than Boyd's vote figure. Now, this time around, the labor issue that you are talking about does not hold sway at all because there is capacity to reach out. It was there. What people want in Osun now, because of 15 months unpaid salary, no promotion, no conversion, no any emolument for 8 years, and no employment at all. The employment deed for teachers were only deed to favor unqualified party members. So all these things count against APC. And PDP is the only one that people want.
You can take that
to the bank.
In your
tomorrow. I'm biased. I'm from the place and I've been working with them closely.
All right, thank you very much.
So that is the situation in Osun.
Thank you very much, Engineer Ni, who is from Osun State, he says. But by the way, I actually did some part of my tertiary education in Ede in Osun State too. So quite familiar too with their daily case and the rest of them. We can take one more call, Rutumi, and then let's see who. Hello and good evening.
Good evening, Aroro.
Great to have you join us. Your name, please, and where you're calling from.
This is Pastor Ladiko.
Oh, okay, Pastor Ladiko, very quickly.
I'm calling from Orile Gomu.
All right,
go ahead. See, the last election, sincerely speaking, they knew that PDP defeated them completely. But they put machineries in place to make sure that an election is inconclusive. Let me tell you, this time around, all the loopholes that they hoped to do whatever they did the last time, these parties have blocked it. So when you look at the indices on ground, that man too is not confident that he's going to win. I'm telling you. Thank you and God bless Nigeria.
All right. Thank you very much, Pastor Ladipo. And that is it on that side. So what do we have just a minute there about to say our final...
Well, we'll know by tomorrow who won in Osun now, I hope. I hope there won't be anything inconclusive or otherwise. So at most by Sunday, if people don't know how the viewing portal works, I believe you go to INEC, log in, create your profile, and you can view the results live as they are uploaded, Abi.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes, so, they can. You can do it and view it. I mean, it's great to try it out. Now I don't have the URL, but I did. I was, in fact, it took my entire time. The other
so you can.
You can. Yes. Search INEC. INEC election results. It will viewing portal. You Google that. It will show you something. Then you have to register with your email, and then it gives you a login password, and then you can access it from there. From there onwards.
And if you can't. Listen to Sherry from Morning Crossfire on Monday morning.
Right.
You know, for details. And Aho and Uforma will be on in the evening, I believe.
Right.
With more analysis. So, so just follow and then we'll see who won. As for us on the program, well, may the best person win. Join us next Friday, 4 p.m., 99.3 Nigeria Info. We hope we'll bring you more data and demographic-based indication rather than kalu-kalu political punditry.
All right. Thank you very much. And have a wonderful weekend. And everyone also too. But you're still listening. We're all still listening because we have the news at the top of the hour. And after that, we have Sammy and Ifeanyi coming with music and moments. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.